Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Joy 94.9.
Current community affairs. The news and views you need to know. You are on the line with Dean Beck.
It's Thursday, the 19th of November, 2015. Thanks very much for joining me on the line today. It's great to be with you. Last Sunday, the Victorian AIDS Council and the Gay Men's Health Centre held their annual general meeting. First time I've been along to one of these things. They're usually very droll. When they're good, they're very droll. When they're, that means that no one's dissenting. Simon Ruth, it's great to have you here. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Dean.
It was a very smooth AGM this year, wasn't it?
It was a very good AGM this year, actually.
I guess that's what I mean.
Ran well, no major issues. And I think it was a nice acknowledgement of our history and where we've come from and discussion of where we're going as well.
It's not easy to run two organisations side by side with the budgets that they have and keep everyone on side.
No, it never is, particularly you.
Particularly me. Yes. And I didn't have anything to say. So there you go. Something must be going right. Now, what did we hear from, an overarching message from the Treasurer was all's well after the sale of the building?
Well, all's certainly well. The sale of the building meant that the Gay Men's Health Centre, so we're two organisations, Victorian AIDS Council, which is the service provider, and Gay Men's Health Centre, which used to be the service provider, but nowadays, in effect, it owns the assets, protecting them if something was to go wrong in the other organisation.
Right.
So that's the basic separation between the two organisations. And yes, since the sale of the building, the Gay Men's Health Centre's made a lot more money. It's $14.6 million better off than
and
it was.
And earning interest, no doubt.
Earning interest on that. It has settled. The building is no longer ours. It now belongs to Golden Sun in Hong Kong. And they'll be developing it at some point in 2-3 years' time once we move out. And the board has set up or is in the process of setting up an investments committee and looking at how it protects those funds from being slowly whittled away and ensuring that the Victorian members get the most out of it.
Yes, that was mentioned that there's going to be a very sort of specific methodology to looking after those funds that will be about securing them for the long term.
Yeah, so there's an investments policy that's been approved by the board.
Right.
There will be an investments committee which will have independent advisors on it who understand how to invest in funds. And the board has set up a policy that will look at what we're prepared and not prepared to invest in. So it will be ethical investments. We won't be investing in war or those sorts of things.
Now, the basic operating costs, anything different, anything stand out of this year over any other year?
We got a bit bigger this year.
You have consecutively over the last sort of 5 to 10 years, I think.
Yeah, over the last 10 years,
looking at the graph.
We've got bigger every year. I guess in last financial year, our drug and alcohol services were probably the big thing to come on board. And then in the next financial year, it will be the South Australian project, which will turn up as well, and STRIDE, which is a national web-based stigma intervention. So that'll be the two big things for this financial year.
I know I ask you every time I see you, but any word on what is happening in Central Victoria and the Country Awareness Network?
Country Awareness Network. So an invited submission process to go out. We were invited to submit for that. They interviewed a number of providers. We were one of the providers interviewed. Then they came back to us and said, we'd like you all to get together and figure out how you can do things together. It's not a very large pot of money when you're looking at possibly three different tenders and three different, completely different ideas. So we're in discussions with the government about they need to clarify better what they would like to purchase from us. In the meantime, the Country Awareness Network is still going along, and Paul is doing fantastic work up there in Bendigo, and we would hope to, at the very least, secure the site as a gay and lesbian centre in Bendigo and the services that are currently being provided there.
Do they own that building?
They own most of that building.
In Myer Street?
in your old home street, yes.
Yeah, it is indeed. Okay, well, you still haven't heard, in other words.
No, it's, right. It's still up in the air at the moment.
Now, you have a few new board members on the VAC.
Yes, we do. So board. We had, at our election, we had 11 people stand for four positions. We are the only AIDS council in the country that has elections every year.
Really?
We're the only AIDS council that actually has a core at AGM each year. Most of the rest have to round up staff to make themselves core. So we are, our membership is very engaged.
Why is that, do you think?
I don't know. Historically, talking to some of the people who've been around for 20 years, they've said that the VAC membership has always been very engaged in the Victorian AIDS Council, whereas services like ACON tap people on the shoulder and ask them to join the board when they have vacancies. We have a very competitive process. So we did. We said goodbye to three board members. We said goodbye to Austin Chia, who was our treasurer, Deb Sykes, and who was the chair of our governance committee, and Mo Alisi. People might know Mo. He's often on the ABC, the face of Muslim youth. And we're welcoming on Jim Hyde. Jim is a predecessor of mine. He was executive officer back in the 90s and has since become an academic and worked for the department.
Known here at Joy 94.9.
Yes, he's got a show.
He does. Is Nothing Sacred on Monday nights at 10 p.m.
Yep. And Aram Hosey, who's a young trans activist, has joined the board, and people might recognise Aram's name. He's the partner of Louise Pratt, who was the West Australian senator.
Right. Yeah. What are they doing over here?
Aram's working, I think, for the Equal Opportunity Commission or the Human Rights Law Centre, one of those.
Has Louise moved over as well?
I don't think so, though she is now a board member of Burnett.
Right. Okay. Right. Well, all sorts of things happening. Very exciting. And, of course, Craig Burnett is the young HIV-positive lad on the board
Craig joined the board about 3 months ago.
Yeah. As a secondment.
Yeah, John Manwaring took a job in the sector and had to move on, and so Craig replaced John in that role as a positive board member. We currently have more board members living with HIV than we've probably had in the last 5 years, so I think that's a good move in the right direction.
Sure. It wasn't a conscious decision, though, was it?
No.
No, just happened that way.
We have to, at a minimum, have two. We've often struggled to get two people to run for the board. We currently have three.
We are going to take a short break, but when we return, we will speak to Simon Ruth, the CEO of the Victorian AIDS Council, about his thoughts from the happenings of yesterday with Charlie Sheen coming out as HIV positive. Stay with us. That's next on The Line.
December 1 is World AIDS Day, a global day of remembering those lost to AIDS, supporting people living with HIV, and celebrating the advances made in science and medicine. Wear a red ribbon on December 1, World AIDS Day, and be a part of the UN AIDS goal of getting to zero in 2020. That's zero new HIV infections, zero discrimination, and zero AIDS-related deaths. Together, we can do it. worldaidsday.org.au.
Current community affairs.
Connecting.
Uplifting.
Representing.
Informing.
Celebrating.
Empowering.
Sharing your passions.
You are on the line with Dean Beck.
Joining me in the studio is Simon Ruth, the CEO of the Victorian AIDS Council. And Simon, we have had a message come through actually regarding Charlie Sheen. Does Charlie Sheen's HIV status have a positive impact on the community? Will it dispel stereotypes or further engage in more stigma, especially the commercial media covering it? What are your thoughts, Simon? So far, the actual media coverage seems to have been okay.
So the story broke a couple of weeks ago that someone in Hollywood, a Hollywood A-listers, AIDS terror, women fearing that they've been infected. And so the early media coverage wasn't great. And then when it got announced that Charlie Sheen would be making an announcement, a lot of media outlets decided to leak that it was actually Charlie Sheen.
And that upset me a bit, actually, because until the words come out of his mouth, it should not be reported.
I did a lot of interviews over the last 48 hours, as did Brent Allen from Living
Positive
Victoria.
And Paul Kidd and others, yes.
And others. And most of the interviews we did in Australia were about the earlier media coverage. It was about, is this stigmatising media? Was there a breach of privacy?
Yes.
Has this been helpful? And so that was nice to not have the hysterical media coverage, at least in this country.
Sure.
And I think his coming out on TV, the media since then has also been quite positive. It hasn't been pointing the finger at,
I noticed with interest that you and Living Positive Victoria jumped on it pretty early and issued a joint media release, pointing the media in the right direction in regards to where to find information on language, statistics, the latest information. Do you think that has had something to do with the more levelled coverage here in this country?
It may have, and I think we're possibly just better at some of this reporting in this country. Our media's, we don't have the tabloid media that they do in the UK and in parts of America that's quite as bad. And we also have the FAO HIV media reporting guidelines. So we actually have a set of guidelines in Australia that we encourage the media to use when reporting on HIV to avoid stigmatising language and blame.
Triple J's The Hack turned the whole story into advocating for PrEP, which was a nice, clever angle. And this message has come through on 0427JOY949 saying that the project handled it very well, Waleed Ali and the panel. So, and the project handled the PrEP story recently reasonably well too, until they went back to the commentator's zone.
Until the last statement,
yes. For their editorial.
They clearly didn't understand the story that they just aired.
No.
I think the other nice thing about the Charlie Sheen story is that he talked about being undetectable, and undetectable viral load is a difficult message to sell to the community, and it's a complicated message, but we've had a lot of questions about what does it mean and journalists wanting to understand it. So, you know, I think that's going to help us get the message out there that HIV isn't a death sentence anymore, that you can live well, and that if you get onto medications early and, you know, comply with your treatment, that you can achieve undetectable status, which means that almost certainly you will never pass on the virus.
We've really had nothing like this in the public domain, as big as this news regarding HIV, for a long, long time.
Yeah, we were talking about it and thought probably Magic Johnson is the closest.
But that was 20 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
A high-level celebrity who's heterosexual reporting HIV. Often, you know, there's been a few gay celebrities reported.
Yep.
And the mainstream media tends to, you know, not think that that's what happens, but when it's heterosexuals, it makes a big difference.
We're speaking with Simon Ruth, the CEO of the Victorian AIDS Council. Let's move on to the award winners from your AGM, who were acknowledged for all sorts of actually lovely things.
Yeah, so every year we hand out the President's Award, and the President's our awards in total go to people who support our mission and our vision and through their own work promote our agenda. And our President's Award this year went to Neil Armfield, and Neil was the director of Holding the Man, and it actually went to Neil's career. Neil started off directing Angels in America 20 years ago here in Melbourne, and our policy director was the lead in Angels in America that year, Colin Vetrini.
Really?
He will hate that I've just mentioned that on radio.
I wasn't aware of that.
And then Neil, over the years, has done a number of other gay-themed and HIV-themed pieces, but of course, this year with Holding the Man, it's had a huge impact on our community and on our understanding of what we've come through over the last 25, 30 years. So Neil got the President's Award. We also honoured our original board with life membership.
Now, that was really lovely. I'm surprised that it's taken how many years to do this.
Yeah, we didn't start life memberships till 93, and they were bought in 83. So they sort of just got overlooked. And it was great that five of them could make it. So Phil Carswell, Alison Thorne, Danny Vidaz, Chris Gillen, Adam Carr were all able to be there. There were three others who couldn't make it, and unfortunately three have passed away in the years since the original VAC board was formed. We also had the inaugural Greg Friday Award. So we have Greg Friday, as many people would know, was a young volunteer of ours, and he volunteered in a number of other groups who perished in the German Wings plane crash earlier in the year.
For those who were at the Globe Awards, they'll remember Greg's father and sister getting up to accept the volunteer award at the Globe Awards.
Yeah, and we had Greg's father and sister there at our awards as well. And so we've created a Young Leadership Award. So Greg was an amazing young leader for us. He set up the Young and Gay Alumni. He set up Gay and Lesbian Engineers at Monash. He set up a number of groups. So we've decided that we're going to honour a young leader under 30 each year.
Right. That's very good.
Yes. And so we gave out the inaugural one this year to a young guy called Jesse Owey, who's one of the facilitators in our Young and Gay program.
It was lovely to see the look of shock on his face when he was given his award.
He had no idea it was coming, yes. And we also we gave awards to Harm Reduction Victoria for their continuing efforts in preventing HIV moving into the drug user group, Archer Magazine, the Prep for Change Boys, and Zoe Bell Gender Collective.
I just want to focus a little on two of those. The Harm Reduction relationship between the Victorian AIDS Council. Is that one that is increasing in its depth?
It is right now. So, you know, VAC established first. VAC was very much around gay men and HIV in the early days. And I think there was a perception in the late 80s that, you know, drug users weren't getting the acknowledgement that they needed and that we actually needed a whole other agenda for them. And Harm Reduction Victoria, which was back then called VivAIDS, Victorian Intravenous AIDS Association, established itself and did what we do, but for drug users, and have advocated for needle exchange and methadone and other options. And we've sort of gone along side by side for a number of years. We partner at different times, but in the last 12 months, particularly with the focus on ICE and ChemSex, that we've started partnering more, and we've started working at parties together. So if you go to TROF, you will see a joint initiative by Harm Reduction Victoria and VAC, ensuring people are safe at TROF and at different parties.
Now, Daniel McPhail and Chris Williams were awarded for their work in setting up a support group online for those on PrEP or wanting to take PrEP, and being an information portal through their social media services. It's got over 700 followers. Mm. They do a tremendous job at, keeping the ball rolling and the words out there, and it's and the information correct. So I'm glad that they were acknowledged. They, of course, will be a part of our World AIDS Day activities with the PrEP Forum that I'm privileged to be hosting.
Yes.
Well, that's covered all of the award winners. Thank you very much for that, Simon. Let's talk about World AIDS Day. It's a very different animal this year. What... From Victorian AIDS Council's perspective, are you going to be doing? You, of course, holder of the red ribbons.
Yes, we are. The Victorian ribbon, so we actually have a different ribbon in Victoria to the rest of the country. For us, World AIDS Day, it will always be a day to remember those we've lost. And every year on the evening of World AIDS Day at the Positive Living Centre, we have our memorial service. It's the biggest community event we run during the year. It gets more than 200 people to it. It's an opportunity for many people who lost their loved ones in the 80s and 90s to come and grieve with their friends who understand what they're going through. I always remember that we have two mothers who turn up who lost their, I think one son was 21 and the other was 22, you know, and they couldn't grieve openly in the late 80s because AIDS was so stigmatised. Sure. And, you know, they meet up once a year at our memorial service, and it's a wonderful thing to see. We have the quilt out. This year we've got Sally Coburn, Dr. Feelgood speaking, and Martin Foley, the minister, along with the gay and lesbian chorus, and John Jackson and... other people will be performing, but it's a wonderful evening.
That quilt must be pretty big. How do you...
We don't have the entire Victorian quilt there.
Okay, just checking.
Parts of it will go around the state. It'll be shown in different places. There's particular quilts we show at our event each year because we know the family members will be there and they actually like to see the quilt. In addition to that, you know, this year it's all about PrEP for us, and we're on the cusp of a biomedical prevention revolution where we actually believe that we can probably stop all new infections in Australia by 2020, and that's our goal. So we will be pushing hard on PrEP in trying to get governments to make commitments to it. Not forgetting condoms are still, you know, first and foremost the easiest way to prevent HIV, but, you know, PrEP is another option that people can have in their arsenal of trying to prevent HIV.
We've done two episodes of PrEP on Hide and Seek recently, and the level of engagement from the community on those two episodes has been extraordinary, and the number of downloads in the smallest possible time has been way outweighing anything else we've ever done, I'm sure. So there is a thirst for that information and for those conversations.
Yeah, there is a thirst for information, and I think we also see it on the Prep for Change Facebook page, Prep Access Now and Time for Prep, all three Melbourne-based Facebook pages that have been established, and they have people from all around the world as members on their pages asking questions about PrEP. Not forgetting that the only country in the world to have made PrEP widely available is the United States. Everyone else is still trying to fight to get it made available in their health systems.
And you're also running a dinner thing to raise money for during World AIDS Day as well.
Is this the Red Dinners?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so it's an annual event we get where we ask people to run dinners in their own home with their friends, donate money that they might make on the evening to us. We have a suggested menu that they operate. We'll send them some balloons and streamers and other things that they can set up their dinner.
Now, Simon Ruth, why don't we have a national testing day like they do in the UK, which seems to do so, so well?
I think it's a great idea. There's just a bit of politics around it, really, that there's three states who have their own testing days. We're not one of them, and none of them are prepared to budge.
Are they different days?
Yes, they're all different days.
Of course they are.
They all call them the National Day.
Oh, God.
In two cases, it's run by state governments, and one's run by an AIDS council. So it's certainly something that the AIDS councils, when we meet, discuss, but it's just one of those things that's quite difficult.
Don't go anywhere, Simon. I'm going to get you to introduce the oration from Tim Watts, MP, right after this.
On the Line.
Gay and lesbian news and interviews.
With Dean Beck.
Made in Melbourne for Australia and the world.
My guest in the studio is Simon Ruth, the CEO of the Victorian AIDS Council, and he was just telling me all about something that, I didn't think would come out of his mouth, but it certainly did. Simon, you're talking about a labia library. Yes, I said labia library. Lesbians, that was labia library.
Yeah, the Victorian Public Health Awards were on last night. They are the biggest event in the health calendar in Victoria. If you're a publicly funded health service, they are the awards you want. The Premier hosts them.
Yep.
The Health Minister is also there. And last night there were two awards. We get invited to it, and I'm a judge on one of the awards. But there were two that stuck out for me. The Royal Children's Hospital won an award for their gender dysphoria service.
Fantastic.
An innovation award, which was great to see.
And life-saving work that they do.
And Women's Health Victoria won the Excellence in Women's Health Award for the Labia Library.
I think you're going to have to explain yourself, Simon.
Well, with the byline, do you think your vagina is normal, is the byline for their service. And they said that, you know, it's got to do with the fact that women see what other women look like in pornography and in women's magazines, and those magazines don't tend to show the diversity of what women's vaginas may look like.
And tend to be heavily airbrushed as well.
Yes, and so the Women's Health Victoria has set up a service where women can go and see that there is a much greater diversity in what women's genitals look like and understand that they are normal and that they don't need cosmetic surgery and that they should feel comfortable with their bodies.
And they're not freaks. We need a penis... what is an alliteration of that? presentation, a penis presentation. That's what we need. Now, Simon, this message on 0427JOY949 has come through. Are you having another hypothetical forum this coming midsummer?
Yes, we are.
You think I wrote that, didn't
yes,
you?
I do think you
no,
wrote
I didn't.
That. So last year we had a hypothetical during midsummer. I think we had 280 people turn up. It was a great event. I pushed it forward. No, none of my staff believed in it, and it turned out to be a huge success. And they all said, we want to do it again next year. And I said, but we wrote all of our issues into this one. What will we have to talk about?
How did it go in Sydney? Did they?
They didn't replicate it in Sydney. Okay. It is on. If anyone wants to watch it, it's on our YouTube page, and our website takes you to it.
I highly recommend it. I'm in it.
You were in it. it was a really good night. But we are doing it again this year during midsummer. It'll be in the calendar. And the theme this year we're looking at, we've got a federal election coming. We've had politicians out and publicly recently. We've had, you know, politicians refusing to, you know, endorse gay marriage and various things. So it'll probably have much more of a political bent. We'll have a couple of politicians on the panel. Should we have quotas for GLBTI politicians? Those are the sorts of issues.
Okay.
And we all weave PrEP and HIV and lesbian health and all of our normal issues into that.
Now, finally, at the AGM, the 23rd annual Keith Harbour Address was presented. It was delivered by Tim Watts, MP, federal member for Gellibrand, which is Julia Gillard's seat. Why did you invite MP Tim Watts to your AGM, Simon?
We were talking. Every year we have the Keith Harbour Address, and we invite someone to speak. Last year was David Menadue on 30 years of activism. The year before it was Sharon Lewin on the cure and what we're looking at. And this year we were tossing around names and looking at ideas. And the coalition had their party room meeting. Where they decided with the Nationals not to endorse same-sex marriage or marriage equality. And there was the statement by Erica Betts that was leaked that Dolce and Gabbana don't want to get married, so why would gay people want to get married? And Tim Watts that day gave a phenomenally passionate and angry speech.
Off the cuff.
Off the cuff. Yeah. About his watching his uncle when he was a young boy dying of AIDS in a small rural Queensland town. And that his uncle's partner is still called an uncle in the family, and that if they'd had marriage equality back then, that it might have made their lives a bit better and would have got the locals to recognise that they were the same as everybody else. And so he gave a wonderful speech around HIV and AIDS, but also linking it to marriage equality and the issues we have today. And we just thought, well, we would like to hear him speak at our event. He came along, he spoke, he was very humble. He talked about PrEP and marriage equality, but he also talked about the impact of watching a loved one die of HIV was for his family and for him as a young boy at the time. And it was a fantastic speech. And everybody who has spoken about it has said it was incredibly moving. And we all look forward to watching his career.
Indeed we do. And yours, Mr. Simon Ruth, thank you very much for joining us on the line today.
Thank you, Dean. Anytime.
And now we'll just hear from Tim Watts, MP, as he talks about the speech he gave in the Federation Chamber.
So I am here because of that speech I gave in the Federation Chamber. And I should just explain what the Federation Chamber is. The Federation Chamber is a subservient chamber in the House of Representatives. It's a chamber that the government delegates to the kind of administrative work of the government that they don't think is particularly important, that they don't want to give a platform to, the things that sort of have to go on because of procedural requirements. But they may not want to put up in lights. Indeed, you can't even call for a vote in the Federation Chamber. It's a room where it would be a quarter of the size of this room. You'd fit a maximum of maybe 50 people in there, but 90% of the time there are no more than 10 people in there. So that was the context. But that day, the day that I was scheduled to speak in the chamber, was the day that the government called their special meeting to determine their position on the topic of marriage equality. And so determined was the then Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, of ensuring that Parliament would not vote on the issue of marriage equality, despite the will of many, many MPs, that he invited members of the National Party to stack out the coalition party room. The meeting went on for an extraordinary 6 hours, during which the business of both the Federation Chamber and the House of Representatives was abandoned. And so my speech was adjourned to the next day. It was one of the more bizarre death throes of the late days of the Abbott government. But unfortunately, it was one of the bizarre incidents at the end of the government that had consequences for real people. When I woke up the next morning to a series of emails from friends, and indeed my uncle as well, recounting Senator Abetz's comments, the most senior Liberal in the Senate, I should point out, I was horrified. Not surprised. Senator Abetz has a long history of saying some bizarre and outrageous things on this topic. Indeed, earlier this year, to not much attention at all, he argued that we shouldn't redefine marriage, we shouldn't pursue marriage equality, because the Labor Party had said that we were living in the Asian century, and indeed no other Asian country had redefined marriage, so what were we talking about here? He dismissed the community campaign for marriage equality, a campaign that, as I say, has been decades in the building, as, quote, the latest fad, and at other times indicated that it would lead to polygamy. Now, someone in the Liberal Party room objected to this in the same way as I did, because these Senator Abetz's comments were leaked to the media. The comments that had been recounted earlier, that Dolce & Gabbana never wanted to get married, so what are we really on about here? Now, I'd watched the spectacle of this six-hour meeting with growing frustration, and those comments really pushed me over the edge. It's one thing to have a difference of opinion in politics. Many of us have different perspectives, different approaches to issues. But this kind of nonsense made me very angry. I thought Australia deserved better, and particularly communities of Australians affected by this issue deserve better. I love my family very deeply. I don't make it a practice of talking about my family in politics. I try to separate my personal life, my identity from politics where possible. And in that sense, I hadn't publicly spoken about my experiences with HIV/AIDS ever, publicly. Not from any sense of stigma, I should say. Indeed, I feel great pride seeing the resilience and strength that my family showed through this experience. More that I feel a very separate delineation between politics and my personal life. But after discussing it with my uncle that morning, I thought that something needed to be said. So I told the Parliament about my Uncle Derek, a warm and loving uncle, an uncle that I, as I say, knew through the naive eyes of a child. For me, he was just the life of the party, the favourite uncle amongst the kids. the one that would always connect with everyone else, the one that did the preparations at Christmas, the one that built the fantastic wreaths, the one with the best lasagna recipe. And through the eyes of a child, this is who I saw Derek for. I didn't see how difficult their life was in the Queensland of the 1980s and 90s. A very difficult life than the one that we all live in the 21st century in inner city Melbourne. And indeed, my grandfather, the patriarch of our family, and indeed the person I was probably closest with in our family, who I lived with for a number of years, found it very difficult in the early days to accept Ian and Derek's relationship. He was a church-going man, helped build the largest church in the country town that we grew up in, very set in his ways. But over time, our family went through the same journey of acceptance and understanding that hundreds of thousands of Australians have over the last two decades. And so that's why I wanted to talk about my family in the Federation Chamber in the wake of Senator Abetz's quite bizarre comments. As we said earlier, Uncle Derek was diagnosed with HIV and eventually died of AIDS. And he struggled with rejection and a lack of recognition from the community around him, while AIDS destroyed him from the inside. Having people hate you for who you are and for carrying a disease that was killing you must be one of the loneliest places on earth. I said in my speech that I particularly hated the way that my uncles dealt with this loneliness, and that they planned Derek's funeral as a celebration. And I remember being very, very angry at Derek's funeral as a young child. I could not understand why everyone was celebrating and why everyone was very, very drunk. I understand now the message behind that funeral and why it was so important to Derek's family and friends. And I was thinking a lot about Derek on the day of Senator Abetz's speech, because some of you may know that Senator Abetz has personal experience caring for a partner experiencing a terminal illness. And I could not understand why he would deny anything to someone in that situation, deny any recognition and support to someone caring for a partner. In the speech that I gave, I said that the Prime Minister and Senator Abetz's comments were viewed widely in the community as anachronistic jokes. And the response to the speech that I gave really vindicated this position. Hundreds of people, the vast majority of people that I've never known before, complete strangers, started calling and emailing my office to share their own stories. It's a funny thing I've found in politics. When you talk about issues like this, people self-disclose to you on all range of issues. I spend most of my life talking about family violence, and you open up these discussions and people share these experiences with you, not experiences that I've been able to experience myself, but you get to hear a first-hand account. Today, more than 150,000 people have watched the speech on my Facebook page. As I say, a speech given in front of less than 10 people. Not exactly what I was expecting. In fact, I called my uncle that afternoon and said, look, I know we spoke about me talking about this, but I think it's going to be seen by a few more people than we were anticipating, which was an experience in itself. But I think it struck a chord, because the LGBTIQ community still struggles for recognition in Australia in many ways. Things are not as bad as they once were. In many places, the worst kinds of discrimination, abuse and harassment, indeed the most prejudicial laws, have disappeared from public view, but certainly not all. Medical advances mean that AIDS, HIV has turned from a highly stigmatised death sentence into a manageable disease. People are more accepting about and more open about people being open about their sexual orientation, which has helped to eliminate the stigma around sex and sexuality. The gay rights movement has moved on from fighting for the most basic rights to these more broader platforms, and I should say that I take particular pride in representing an electorate that was on the front line of much of that organising. The work of community activists in Yarraville in particular is something that I take a particular pride in. So the policy debate has changed from one of decriminalisation to one of marriage equality and equal adoption rights, an extraordinary thing to contemplate given where we were 30 years ago. And I'd like to say as a side note that I was particularly pleased to see last week the Victorian Parliament joining the ACT, Western Australia and New South Wales and passing legislation to enable same-sex couples to adopt. This, I think we can all agree, is progress and something that is worth holding on to when we all experience the frustration about the painfully slow rate of progress, pace of change and other issues. But regardless, discrimination and stigma still exist, both legally and socially, and there is lots more that needs to be done to right these wrongs. If you're Australian and you're gay, you have much higher risk of being homeless, experiencing physical or sexual violence, suffering from depression and anxiety. And there are many fronts that we need to fight this, these issues from. In 2013, for example, a then Labor government expanded funding to community legal centres by $52.7 million as part of the 2013-14 budget. An issue that to the uninitiated would seem to be completely unrelated to HIV/AIDS. Indeed, the government cut this funding substantially in their first horror budget, probably with little appreciation for what it would do with people to people living with HIV/AIDS. Indeed, the HIV/AIDS Legal Centre and the Positive Living Centre provides free legal advice for people living with HIV/AIDS, their partners and family members. It and other legal community legal centres rely on government funding to keep the doors open, yet on the current trajectory, on 2017, funding for these kinds of legal centres will fall off a cliff. If we are going to ensure that people get access to the legal advice that they need, regardless of economic capacity, funding these sorts of centres is essential. It's a front that we need to roll back the disadvantage and discrimination I was talking about earlier. People with HIV/AIDS need to know their rights in the workplace and at home, be able to choose a power of attorney, have access to legal representation. Access to these services are essential if we are to continue the fight against this discrimination and stigma. We have also seen, in recent years, a spike in diagnosis rates for HIV. Approximately 27,000 people in Australia live with HIV, and around 75% of those being gay or bisexual men. I don't need to tell anyone in this room about this, but it is striking for someone of my generation to hear of this, because while the HIV diagnosis rate has remained stable in the last few years, this was preceded by around a decade of gradually increasing rates. And a generation of young people who did not see firsthand the devastating effects of AIDS in the 80s and 90s, men of my generation, have not been taking traditional precautionary measures to prevent its spread in the way that is needed. A doubling of testing rates, educational campaign and a renewed emphasis on early access to HIV treatments has contributed to a stabilising of diagnosis over the last 3 years, but more needs to be done. There is another service, or in this case product, that it deserves mention in this case, principally PrEP. The VAC has done some very effective campaigning in the community to inform people about the effectiveness of PrEP. I know that you've been actively lobbying decision makers in government to make PrEP available for people who have an increased risk of HIV. PrEP gives us a realistic chance of almost completely eliminating the accidental spread of HIV in Australia. And I know that Rainbow Labor and LGBTIQ activists within the party have been working to promote this issue through our policy-making forums for many years. And in this respect, in 2015, Labor included in our national platform a new Section 96 that reads, Labor recognises the importance of renewing efforts to reduce the spread of HIV/AIDS, including adopting prophylactic treatments subject to the approval of independent regulators and any recommendation from the Pharmaceutical Benefits Advisory Committee. Sexually transmitted infections and bloodborne viruses in partnership with the non-government organisation sector and driven by expert advice. The following section reads that Labor recognises the importance of access to treatment as a key factor in the prevention of and spread of HIV/AIDS and supports universal access to treatment. Now, my view is that opting in to use a drug like PrEP when used as part of a suite of protective measures is a positive approach to your own health. And while we don't want to discourage people at risk from HIV from taking other sensible precautions, PrEP does look to be a highly promising additional measure in the fight against HIV in Australia. And in this context, PBS listing would seem to make a lot of sense in this context. Last year, the 20th International AIDS Conference in Melbourne, former US President Bill Clinton clamoured it, we were within reach of an AIDS-free generation. And it's a worthy sentiment, but we will only make it a reality through actions, not words. My Uncle Derek, just like Keith Harbour, was intent on doing things with a political message. Whether we're talking about marriage equality, preventing the spread of HIV, or removing discrimination in all of our laws, we are not dealing with abstract principles. We are dealing with serious matters of human dignity. There are people involved. I don't have to tell the people sitting in this room that the LGBTIQ rights movement has gone through difficult times, but I think that is evident now that we are seeing some dividends of this hard work. Just as an example of how far we've come, the public pressure on the government to allow a conscience vote in Parliament on removing the discrimination that currently exists in the Marriage Act is incredible. And the fact that it is not occurring due to internal politics within another political party is one thing, but the existence of this pressure is undeniable. One of the aspects of being an MP is that I spend a lot of time in schools. There are 50 schools in my electorate, and I talk a lot to kids about the things that make them angry in life. What are the things that they want to see changed in their society? What are the things that they want me as a participant in our democratic society to be doing? And it is very rare that you don't hear marriage equality raised in our classrooms by our children. And I can tell you, this is light years ahead of even when I was in high school in terms of public attitudes, and that wasn't that long ago, I promise you, although it seems longer every year I'm in politics. So we are seeing progress, but we must continue to prosecute the case for causes like marriage equality in the greater community, because it reinforces the ideal of equality and normalcy that helps chip away at other related forms of stigma and discrimination. It doesn't happen on its own, and none of the outcomes are set in stone. None of this is linear. None of this is decided in advance. Cultural change doesn't just happen. It only happens when people organise and fight for it. I look forward to continuing the challenge to advocate for the rights of a community that's fought so hard for so long for the most basic forms of equality and recognition, a recognition that was deserved all along. So it's my pleasure to be with you today, to hear the progress that's been made in the past year, and to plan for the successes and victories to come. Thank you very much for having me.
That was Tim Watts, MP, member for Gellibrand, giving the oration at the AGM of the Victorian AIDS Council just last Sunday. And this message came through on 0427 joy 949. Life experience is very important to any political candidate's philosophy. We need more people like Tim to be open about their families. It's refreshing and lovely. Thank you very much for that.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.